Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of John Jelinek. First I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. John Jelinek was born on February 20, 1967, and lived in Blairsville, Pennsylvania. This is 41 miles east of Pittsburgh. When John was just a few months old, his father died in a motor vehicle collision. John excelled in his educational pursuits and eventually went to dental school in Pittsburgh. After graduating, he returned to Blairsville and entered a dental practice with a partner. In 1997, he became romantically involved with a woman named Michelle, who had two children. She worked as a model promoting the beer company Budweiser. These models are referred to as Budweiser girls. John felt as though there was an attractiveness differential between him and Michelle and would tell people he couldn't believe he was with somebody who was so attractive. He gave Michelle a 2-carat diamond ring, and on December 31, 1997, the couple married in Las Vegas. Initially, Michelle and her two children lived in John's house at 233 South Spring Street. Later, the family moved into a larger house in White Township. The couple wanted to have a child together, but they did not have success. On March 17, 2000, they adopted a son from Russia named JJ. From an outside perspective, their life seemed ideal, but from very early in their marriage, the couple was unhappy. Acquaintances of John believed that Michelle was not attracted to him. There was no affection in the relationship, and she appeared to be disgusted by him. On March 6, 2002, the couple separated after they both had affairs. John sold the house in White Township and moved back into his smaller house on South Spring Street in Blairsville. Michelle and the children lived in a different house at 10 Susan Drive in Indiana, Pennsylvania, about 16 miles north. Near the end of 2004, Michelle's lover, a Pennsylvania state trooper named Kevin James Foley, moved into the house on Susan Drive. Michelle allegedly told one of John's friends that Kevin's sexual performance was amazing. To help pay the bills, Michelle received $3,800 a month in support from John. The couple shared custody of JJ, but Michelle did not seem too happy with this arrangement. She accused John of strangling JJ. A court order was issued which prevented John from coming into contact with JJ or Michelle. Later, John was arrested after Michelle accused him of violating that order. He denied any wrongdoing, including strangling JJ, but agreed to anger management classes so that he could once again have contact with JJ. John wanted to take JJ to Disney World and secured permission from the court for this trip. When John went to pick up JJ, he noticed that his head had been shaved. John believed that Michelle did this so JJ would look awkward in the photographs taken in Disney World. The trip to Disney World was a disaster. John became aggravated because JJ kept referring to Michelle's lover, Kevin Foley, as Trooper Daddy. After the trip, the tense custody sharing arrangement continued. Michelle frequently demanded money from John, and he always gave in to her demands. In 2005, Michelle accused John of mistreating JJ in a sexual manner. When the authorities spoke to JJ, he said that John had offended against him, but his narrative appeared to be rehearsed. Many people suspected that Michelle coached JJ to falsely accuse his father. No charges were filed against John, and the shared custody arrangement continued. When John went to pick up JJ for Thanksgiving in 2005, after 6 months without seeing him, he said that JJ cried, screamed, and spit in his face. John realized that his relationship with his son had been severely damaged. This visit was canceled, and John did not pick up JJ for Christmas either. In January 2006, John and Michelle came to an agreement as far as their divorce. Michelle would get 60% of the assets and $1,300 a month in support. So her support payments were going to drop by $2,500 a month. Custody with JJ would be shared under this agreement. John was hoping to rebuild his relationship with his son. Even though John and Michelle had reached an agreement, the divorce was not yet finalized. Michelle continued asking John for money, but he stopped taking her calls. Right after this, John's vehicle was vandalized by an unknown perpetrator. All this arguing and strife left John with a bad feeling. he told people that he had a premonition that he was going to be murdered by Michelle's boyfriend, Kevin Foley, and the murder would go unsolved due to Kevin's influence as a state trooper. John wanted to send his attorney $10,000 so that his murder could be investigated. He had invented a new financial service, prepaid murder investigations, a product for people who are extremely pessimistic, but also extremely organized. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On April 13, 2006, at about 3:25 p.m., one of John's neighbors contacted the police after finding him dead inside the front door of his house on South Spring Street. Here's what the police found during the course of their investigation. 39-year-old John Jelinek had been brutally murdered. He had injuries to his head, and his throat had been slashed. There were shoe prints and blood leading through the house and out the back door. John was not wearing any shoes. On a table, there were divorce papers with blood on them. John's divorce was to be finalized the next day. Wrapped Christmas presents for JJ were found in the house. Neighbors said they heard a commotion sometime between 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. One neighbor said it sounded like a pig squealing. Another neighbor heard someone say, "I will never loan you money again." The police believed the killer had attacked John in the back of the house and then chased him all throughout the house, eventually smashing his head through the glass in the front door before slashing his throat with a knife. The police recovered DNA from under John's fingernails, but did not send it out for testing right away. Immediately after the murder, Michelle's lover, Kevin Foley, was the obvious suspect for a few reasons. Kevin made it clear that he hated John and told people he wanted John dead. And right after the murder, Kevin had a mysterious injury on his forehead, which he claimed was caused by playing hockey. Despite this evidence against Kevin, the police were reluctant to investigate him. Many other potential suspects were interviewed, but Kevin was never interviewed. The police would later say they had a hard time believing that a state trooper could be a killer. When investigators did finally decide to take a closer look at Kevin, his fellow troopers were not helpful. They were not interested in talking. Eventually, with the help of the Pennsylvania State Attorney General, Kevin was thoroughly investigated. Laboratory tests revealed that Kevin's DNA was under John's fingernails. In the Caucasian population, there was only a 1 in 13,000 chance that the DNA came from somebody other than Kevin Foley. This may seem like a pretty decent match, but there was still too much uncertainty. Later, the police contacted a company that performed a new type of analysis on the DNA, one that had never been used in court. The company concluded that there was a 1 in 189 billion chance that the DNA came from someone other than Kevin. On September 27, 2007, Kevin Foley was arrested and charged with criminal homicide. This charge allows a jury to convict him of first-degree murder or of a lesser charge, like manslaughter. At his trial in 2009, the jury learned about the new DNA testing technique, and they were convinced of its accuracy. On March 19, 2009, Kevin Foley was convicted of first-degree murder. Just over 2 months later, he received a sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. This was the mandatory sentence in this case. Michelle was never charged with any crime, and she denied any wrongdoing. On the day that Kevin was sentenced, she took her three children and moved to Savannah, Georgia. Michelle was still married to John when he was murdered. Therefore, she collected on his $1 million life insurance policy. Now moving to my analysis. Kevin Foley maintains his innocence, and he has a few supporters who argue that the DNA test was unproven technology. The state, of course, disagrees. They argued that Kevin's DNA was under John's fingernails. The DNA was there because John defended himself against Kevin during the murder. This brings me to the question, was Kevin Foley guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Kevin was dating Michelle, who was in the middle of a contentious divorce with John. The divorce was to be finalized the day after the murder, which meant that Michelle's income would be cut by $2,500 a month. John had a $1 million life insurance policy. Kevin's lover, Michelle, was the beneficiary. Michelle would not have received the money if the divorce had been finalized. Kevin routinely made negative statements to his coworkers about John. One coworker said it was pretty much a daily thing. Kevin said things like he wished John would die, he wished John would be killed in a motor vehicle collision, John was a piece of blank, I hate this guy, and he said he would like to kill the blank blanker and ask a fellow trooper if he would help him do it. The blanks rhyme with stock ducker. On April 12, 2006, the day before the murder, Kevin Foley was at a hockey game in Delmont, Pennsylvania, 17 miles from Blairsville. He arrived at the game at 10:30 p.m. and left at midnight, now on April 13. His Ford Explorer was captured on video surveillance at 1:48 a.m. in Blairsville, driving north on Walnut Street and turning east on Market Street. This intersection is just 1,160 feet from John's house on South Spring Street. Neighbors heard a commotion at John's house between 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. Participants in the hockey game did not observe any injuries on Kevin when he left. The next day, there was an injury above Kevin's left eye, which appeared to be a fingernail scratch. DNA found under John's fingernails was a match to Kevin's. Kevin had a hockey bag that he regularly used when playing hockey, but he gave the police a different hockey bag. The original bag was never found. At the scene of the murder, shoe prints in blood were found. They had been made by a pair of ASICS brand shoes called Gel Creed, and they were size 10. In August 2003, Kevin had ordered a pair of shoes through a plan that allowed law enforcement to buy directly from ASICS. He had purchased Gel Creed, size 10. Kevin said he could not remember what happened to those shoes. After the murder, he started wearing Nike brand shoes instead of ASICS, despite having worn ASICS for many years. John was murdered with a knife, and Kevin was known to be a knife guy. He routinely opened and shut a folding knife that he carried with him. For example, he did this at work during roll call. One time, he accidentally cut open the groin area of a supervisor's pair of pants. After the murder, Kevin stopped playing with his knife. Now moving to the exculpatory factors. In theory, any number of people could have murdered John. There is no evidence that John ever loaned Kevin money, yet a witness heard somebody say, "I will never loan you money again." Kevin admitted to making statements about wishing John was dead, but said he was joking. That's pretty much it for the exculpatory factors. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Kevin Foley was guilty? Yes, in my opinion, he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I think what happened here is pretty straightforward. Kevin murdered John because he was angry with him. The relationship that John had with Michelle led to a lot of hard feelings, and Kevin took this personally. Kevin's status as a state trooper almost prevented him from being investigated, but his many negative statements about John were impossible to disregard. As much as John's colleagues did not want to believe he was guilty, they had to admit that he was the killer. If they had reported his threats immediately, maybe this murder could have been prevented. Now moving to my final thoughts. One of the reasons this case is so well known is due to the premonition that John Jelinek had and the fact that two psychics were asked to investigate. Some people argue this case had supernatural components, but it did not. John did not need mystical abilities to predict his own murder. The only thing he needed was the knowledge that Kevin was an angry and violent individual. John learned this from observing Kevin. There was no magical power involved here. As far as the psychics, people make it seem like they must have been receiving voices from the supernatural realm because they were able to name a few characteristics of the killer. These are characteristics that, in theory, they should not have known. For example, they said the killer had red hair, had once served in the military, and drove a red SUV. At first, this might seem amazing. How could they have possibly known these things? Upon closer inspection, the answer is pretty obvious. As I mentioned, from the very beginning of this case, people thought that Kevin Foley was the killer. This was talked about by law enforcement on the steps of John's house as evidence was being collected inside. It was not a secret from anyone. The woman who brought in the psychics would have certainly known about Kevin because she was John's neighbor. She was worried that her husband was going to be falsely accused of the murder, which is why she contacted the psychics. It stands to reason these psychics would have been told about Kevin. It's also possible they were just guessing, or they offered a long list of characteristics and people just remembered the ones that happened to match. One of the most offensive things about the psychics in this case is how they pretended that John was speaking to them from beyond the grave. He was saying things like, pay attention to the shoe prints and blood. If John was really speaking to them, why would he be so cryptic? This is a man who had a lot of interest in his case being investigated. He even wanted to pay $10,000 to his attorney so the investigation would take place after his murder. Why would he direct people to pieces of evidence and not just say something like, Kevin Foley, the knife-happy trooper, is the one who murdered me? It's insulting to John to make it seem like he would not have had the common sense just to state who the killer was, like he would prefer to play a game of Clue rather than see his case solved. Psychics are disrespectful to murder victims and without exception represent an unnecessary distraction to investigations. They can lead gullible and superstitious police officers in the wrong direction. Those are my thoughts on the case of John Jelinek. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.